You are listening to an ADIS Journal podcast.
Hello and welcome to our podcast discussion on overcoming hyperkalemia as a barrier to achieving optimal RASi therapy and cardiorenal protection in individuals with cardiorenal disease. My name is Dr. Andrew Frankel, and I'm a consultant kidney doctor at Imperial College Healthcare NHS Trust in London. I'm joined by my colleague, Professor Stephen Wheatcroft, for this discussion. This podcast and its transcript will be published in Advances in Therapy. The work that we will be discussing is an industry-sponsored initiative that was initiated, funded, and coordinated by AstraZeneca. And AstraZeneca employees are also credited as authors. The initiative has also been supported by the Cardiorenal Metabolic Partnership, known as CareMe UK. That is a collaboration between UK national societies representing cardiovascular disease, kidney disease, and diabetes across both primary and secondary care, including the British Cardiovascular Society, the UK Kidney Association, the Association of British Clinical Diabetologists, the Primary Care Cardiovascular Society, and the Primary Care Diabetes Society. Established in 2019, CareMe UK focuses on education, guidance, and support for healthcare practitioners to provide them with the skills, knowledge necessary to optimize management of people with cardiovascular disease, chronic kidney disease, and diabetes. And Professor Stephen Wheatcroft is currently the national lead for CareMe UK.
Hello, everyone. My name is Stephen Wheatcroft, and I'm a professor of cardiometabolic medicine and consultant cardiologist in Leeds, UK, and chair of the CareMe UK partnership. Andrew, I'm looking forward to this discussion.
So am I, Stephen. But before we delve into the main topic, I think it's important to recap for the audience the value of RASi, renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system inhibitors, in managing CKD and heart failure.
Absolutely. As I'm sure many already know, RASi therapies are an evidence-based and guideline-directed treatment and a cornerstone of CKD and heart failure management, proven to provide effective cardiorenal protection. Indeed, guidelines such as the KDIGO 2024 Clinical Practice Guideline for the evaluation and management of CKD, the ESC guidelines for the diagnosis and treatment of acute and chronic heart failure, and the AHA/ACC/HFSA guideline for the management of heart failure recommend treatment with RASi therapy at the maximum tolerated dose to achieve the best clinical outcomes. Unfortunately, we know that in clinical practice, RASi therapy is often not prescribed to optimal target dose according to these treatment guidelines. One UK study showed that 42% of RASi prescriptions for CKD and 37% of prescriptions for heart failure were at less than half the guideline recommended dose. CKD and heart failure are risk factors for hyperkalemia, a disorder characterized by high serum potassium levels, typically greater than 5 millimoles per litre. And RASi therapy poses an additional hyperkalemia risk. In fact, individuals with cardiorenal disease treated with RASi therapy have an almost twofold increase in the risk of hyperkalemia relative to those not treated with RASi therapy. Hyperkalemia is considered as a substantial barrier to individuals receiving guideline-recommended doses of RASi therapy. It is unfortunate that the populations who are known to derive the greatest benefit from RASi therapy are the same populations who are at the highest risk of developing hyperkalemia.
I think that is a great summary to start with. Thank you. It's important to note that the current international guidelines for both CKD and heart failure, which you've described, which include KDIGO, ESC, and the ACC and HFSA guidelines, state clearly that hyperkalemia should not be a barrier to RASi therapy. Unfortunately, when hyperkalemia occurs in clinical practice, clinicians often down titrate or discontinue RASi therapy. And these down titrations and discontinuations are then maintained over time. This has a really negative effect for individuals with cardiorenal disease, as both discontinuation and down titration of RASi therapy is associated with increased morbidity and mortality. So this is the central clinical dilemma for primary and secondary care clinicians: how to attain and then maintain optimized RASi therapy while simultaneously preventing and managing hyperkalemia.
And that nicely leads us to the objective of this podcast. 11 multidisciplinary and multiprofessional experts, including ourselves, from the fields of nephrology, cardiology, and primary care, gathered to consider how to overcome hyperkalemia as a barrier to RASi therapy optimization and cardiorenal protection in individuals with cardiorenal disease who experience hyperkalemia. The care pathway was analysed, and the experts identified four key areas of suboptimal and variable clinical practice. These were RASi therapy optimization, the definition and management of acute hyperkalemia, communications between secondary and primary care, and patient education.
Exactly right. In this podcast article, we are going to discuss those four key areas, including the reason to focus on each area, the clinical challenges, and the principles of optimal practice as proposed by the expert group. Additionally, in tandem with this podcast, the expert group produced a series of practical guides for clinicians to enable them to implement the principles of optimal practice. The link to these practical guides can be found in the key summary points and reference list. The first key area that we identified is RASi therapy and initiation and optimization in patients with cardiorenal disease. As we mentioned, hyperkalemia remains a major hurdle that limits RASi optimization and triggers RASi down titration or discontinuation. When coupled with an absent or cautious approach to RASi reinitiation following hyperkalemia, many individuals miss out on optimal cardiorenal protection. Stephen, would you like to begin with the challenges that we identified in this key area?
Absolutely. We identified several key challenges, Andrew. First, there are unclear and variable definitions of what we mean by RASi therapy and RASi optimization in clinical practice. We define RASi therapy as angiotensin-converting enzyme inhibitors, or ACE inhibitors, angiotensin II receptor blockers, or ARBs, angiotensin receptor neprilysin inhibitors, or ARNI, and mineralocorticoid receptor antagonists, or MRA. We define RASi optimization as the attainment and maintenance of either the highest recommended licensed dose for the indication, or failing this, the closest maximum tolerated dose. Continuing with this variability theme, it's important to note that RASi optimization will not be the same for all individuals. For example, some key variables that influence prescribing decisions and concerns regarding optimizing RASi are patient age, frailty, comorbidities, polypharmacy, renal function, and blood pressure.
Yes, this variability is very challenging to consistent care. Another key challenge is that not all prescribing clinicians recognize the importance of optimizing and maintaining RASi in individuals with cardiorenal disease. The involvement of multiple specialties and their different guidelines can complicate decisions and treatment pathways. This ultimately creates a barrier to patients receiving optimal cardiorenal protection. And then we come to the consideration of hyperkalemia in RASi optimization. Guidelines clearly recommend the potassium-lowering strategies which facilitate RASi optimization should be employed before clinicians down titrate or discontinue RASi, and that RASi therapy down titration or discontinuation should be seen as a last resort. However, these approaches are not widely implemented in clinical practice, and knowledge of potassium lowering strategies and therapies is variable among healthcare professionals. Stephen, how can we change practice in order to improve RASi therapy optimization?
Based on these challenges, the expert group proposed seven principles of optimal care for RASi optimization in patients with cardiorenal disease. Firstly, patients should be prescribed and maintained on optimized RASi therapy for cardiorenal protection. To reiterate, this is defined as the attainment and maintenance of either the highest licensed dose for the indication, or failing this, the closest maximum tolerated dose. Secondly, hyperkalemia should be seen as a predictable and recurrent risk in individuals living with cardiorenal disease and treated with RASi therapy. It requires a preemptive, proactive, and long-term approach. Therefore, thirdly, all patients prior to starting on RASi therapy need thorough assessment for risk factors for hyperkalemia, which should be regularly reviewed and addressed as part of the long-term monitoring strategy. Risk factors include current potassium level, potassium-elevating drugs, poor glycemic control, constipation, metabolic acidosis, and a diet that is high in animal or processed foods. Next, many individuals can tolerate rapid RASi therapy optimization, such that maximum dose is prescribed with minimal dose increments. However, a more cautious optimization approach, i.e. a smaller starting dose and incremental dose adjustments, should be considered in people with multimorbidity and frailty. Point 5. RASi down-titration and discontinuation should be a last resort in the prevention and management of hyperkalemia in individuals living with cardiorenal disease and treated with RASi therapy, utilized only once alternative potassium-lowering strategies and therapies have been exhausted. Point 6. Regard should be given to the importance of seeking specialist advice whenever RASi down-titration or discontinuing is being considered due to hyperkalemia. And finally, individuals with cardiorenal disease should be empowered with knowledge regarding the importance of optimized RASi therapy in cardiorenal disease. The next key area that we identified is the definition and management of acute hyperkalemia in patients with cardiorenal disease on RASi therapy. Andrew, can you tell us a bit more about the importance of this topic?
Well, I would start by saying hyperkalemia should be considered a predictable, recurrent, a manageable issue in those living with cardiorenal disease and on RASi therapy. However, there is considerable variation in the many guidelines regarding the definitions of mild, moderate, and severe hyperkalemia, at what potassium level hyperkalemia should be treated, and where and how to best manage these individuals.
Indeed, this lack of consensus between guidelines, professional bodies, and hospital trusts can cause confusion and inconsistency in clinical practice. Hyperkalemia may present as a primary or secondary medical issue in the community, at hospital admission, or during hospital admission. Different severities of hyperkalemia may require a different approach. For example, potassium levels of 5.5 to 5.9 millimoles per liter may not require secondary care involvement, whilst urgent hospital assessment is needed in individuals who have a serum potassium greater than or equal to 6.5 millimoles per litre, or associated acute kidney injury, or who are acutely unwell or have ECG changes.
Another challenge is that the existing guidelines and local protocols for acute hyperkalemia are limited by the use of long-established but potentially problematic interventions, including insulin and dextrose, calcium rezonium, and dietary potassium intake interventions. There are alternative potassium-lowering therapies which are more effective with less adverse impact, and these have become available on the NHS, but these are not widely prescribed, and they should be considered where clinically appropriate in the management of acute hyperkalemia. Such therapies can also be prescribed longer term for the prevention of recurrent hyperkalemia.
That's exactly right. A further key point is that existing guidelines and local protocols are limited in focus to the short-term lowering of potassium levels. This fails to consider the essential longer-term needs to prevent hyperkalemia recurrence and to maintain optimized RASi for cardiorenal protection, or restarting RASi therapies if they are paused. So what are the principles of optimal care that were recommended by the experts?
So let me summarize six principles that relate to the definition and management of acute hyperkalemia in patients with cardiorenal disease who are on RASi therapy. Let's start with acute hyperkalemia, which can be defined as mild, where the potassium is 5.5 to 5.9, moderate, with a potassium of 6 to 6.4, or severe, when it is greater than or equal to 6.5. Once you have that definition, the second principle is to always consider pseudohyperkalemia. And this may need to be ruled out actively by a repeat sample taken in circumstances where there is less likely to be pseudohyperkalemia. Thirdly, when considering the decision of where to manage the patient, you need to look at a number of factors. The potassium level, if you have access to this, an ECG, and whether there are changes on the ECG that suggest severe hyperkalemia, the presence of an acute kidney injury, the actual condition of the patient, and the availability of local resources and expertise. It's also worth considering why and where the potassium measurement was taken. If it was part of regular monitoring in an otherwise well individual, or was it taken during an intercurrent illness? That will also significantly contribute to the decision of where to manage the patient. Fourthly, you must consider all appropriate potassium lowering strategies and therapies, both the pharmacological and the non-pharmacological. They should be considered and used in the treatment of acute hyperkalemia. Only down-titrate, withhold, or discontinue RASi therapy when all other appropriate interventions have been exhausted. Consider adjustment of any other potassium elevating drugs that the patient is on. Consider education in regard to diet, correction of metabolic acidosis, optimization of glycemic control, addressing constipation, and consider the role of potassium lowering medications. The fifth point is that the management of acute hyperkalemia must always include a plan to prevent recurrence of hyperkalemia and to ensure as far as possible continuation or reintroduction of the RASi therapy. And finally, for individuals with cardiorenal disease, you should empower them regarding hyperkalemia in the context of their cardiorenal disease and RASi therapy so that they understand the rationale of this treatment and the importance of maintaining this.
The third area that we identified focuses on communications between secondary and primary care for the management of patients with cardiorenal disease on RASi therapy. Stephen, can you tell us a bit more why this is important?
Of course. As we know, care for patients with cardiorenal disease on RASi therapy who experience hyperkalemia requires consistent management, but their care involves multiple specialties across multiple clinical environments, including emergency departments, hospital wards, outpatient clinics, and general practice. Effective communication between secondary and primary care professionals is therefore a vital element of the treatment pathway. Unfortunately, multiple care transitions can make ongoing care challenging, and communications often fall short of desired requirements. This makes it difficult for primary care professionals to manage ongoing care and places patients at risk of adverse outcomes.
I completely agree, and this is due to several reasons. First of all, communications are often limited by unclear or absent definitions in regard to the roles and responsibilities of primary and secondary care in the management of these individuals. Communications must be clear enough to enable primary care professionals to fulfill their role in terms of the ongoing management of individuals once they are established on therapy and overseeing RASi and potassium lowering therapies. Also, where secondary care specialists identify the need for referral to other secondary care specialists, they should complete the referral themselves rather than requesting the general practitioners refer the patients.
Another important factor is that secondary to primary care communications are highly variable in terms of access, content, and clarity. For example, lack of access to secondary care medical notes, variable access to specialist advice, and slow response times can exacerbate the difficulties of managing unfamiliar treatment plans in primary care. And in many cases, secondary to primary care communications are completed by time-constrained healthcare professionals using suboptimal templates or by training-grade healthcare professionals who may not have been involved in the individual's care or be aware of the information required by primary care for ongoing management.
And what do you find then are the consequences of these challenges?
Unfortunately, communications often lack clarity on or omit important information that enables primary care to optimize ongoing management. This includes changes in RASi and potassium lowering therapies, intended treatment titrations and durations, monitoring requirements and referrals to other specialists. We also miss an opportunity to communicate key and timely messages to primary care, regarding the real importance of continuation of RASi, the risk of recurrent hyperkalemia, and the need for ongoing potassium-lowering strategies and therapies.
These are all extremely important challenges. To address these challenges, we propose a number of principles relating to the optimal communication about individuals with cardiorenal disease on RASi therapy with acute or recurrent hyperkalemia. Firstly, communications from secondary to primary care must be clear enough to enable primary care professionals to fulfill their role. Communications should also be shared with all relevant treating specialists to ensure continuity of care. Communications present an opportunity for education and key messaging, which should include the importance of RASi therapy optimization in cardiorenal disease, not to reduce or stop RASi therapies indefinitely due to hyperkalemia or other reasons without specialist input. If RASi therapies are reduced or paused, emphasizing the importance of reinitiation and optimization wherever possible, seeking specialist advice if required. Information on potassium-lowering strategies or therapies initiated, including advice that if RASi therapies are paused, the potassium-lowering therapies must also be paused. It is also one of our key points that communications should provide key content on changes in medication, including RASi and potassium-lowering therapy, intended treatment titrations and durations, ongoing clinical and electrolyte monitoring requirements, any further investigations to be carried out, what the follow-up will be by the admitting team or specialist teams, that referral to other specialists if indicated has been made, and whether required actions are responsibility of secondary care or primary care. In addition, the communications should signpost to further specialist information or points of contact. Always the individuals, the patients with cardiorenal disease, should be given copies of the relevant documentation.
The final key area that we identified is education for patients with cardiorenal disease on RASi therapy. Patient education is extremely important, and several of the other key areas we discussed have included principles for empowering patients. We focused on this area specifically, as patient education empowers individuals to take greater control and make informed decisions over factors affecting their own health. Andrew, how are we doing in terms of patient education in cardiorenal disease?
Well, individuals with cardiorenal disease experience complex and often comorbid disease, and so high-quality education is crucial. Unfortunately, education for individuals with cardiorenal disease and on RASi therapy with acute or recurrent hyperkalemia is often absent or inadequate. This leads to a lack of understanding, non-adherence to therapy, reduced cardiorenal disease control, and increased risk of hyperkalemia and other complications.
Several factors result in absent or inadequate education in these patients. Andrew, would you like to begin describing them?
Sure. First of all, multiple specialties manage these patients, and it is important that all healthcare professionals involved have the required knowledge and are able to confidently manage the interplay between cardiorenal disease, RASi therapy, and hyperkalemia. If a healthcare professional lacks knowledge, this can result in insufficient and even differing information being provided to the patient. High-quality education provided by well-informed healthcare professionals, therefore, is crucial. The individual with cardiorenal disease is the only common denominator in all the healthcare interactions. And if that individual is well-educated, they become a valuable member of their own care team.
That's a great point, Andrew. However, the challenges are not all healthcare professional focused. There are also challenges with patients themselves. Individuals with cardiorenal disease are a diverse population, and the desire for information and the capacity to access, understand, retain, and use this information varies between individuals. Age, culture, language, and health literacy are just a few of the factors that may contribute here. We must remember that a higher proportion of older adults may prefer less participation and are more likely to defer decision-making to a healthcare professional, and that both chronic kidney disease and heart failure may be associated with cognitive impairment. which can further impact patient involvement. And of course, there are also diverse preferences for print or digital information, with many patients preferring physical information. Patient stories and peer support may be impactful. So, Andrew, how do we improve patient education?
That is a good and indeed very important question. We actually have an excellent opportunity to educate patients if we utilise all clinical encounters across primary and secondary care, and repetition of key messages can be delivered and is essential to reinforce understanding. This approach, of course, aligns with the Making Every Contact Count framework, the national initiative that encourages health and social care staff to use the opportunities arising during all routine interactions with patients to have conversations with them about how they might make positive improvements to their health or well-being.
Yes, exactly. It is these key points that we have used to establish our principles of optimal care for educating individuals with cardiorenal disease on RASi therapy with acute or recurrent hyperkalemia. Namely that, first, individuals with cardiorenal disease are at risk of serious complications from their disease or prescribed medications if not managed or self-managed correctly. Second, key messages must be conferred in the education of individuals with cardiorenal disease on RASi therapy with acute or recurrent hyperkalemia. This includes the importance of optimized and maintained RASi therapy in the treatment of cardiorenal disease, the link between cardiorenal disease, RASi therapy, and hyperkalemia, the importance of a preemptive, proactive, and long-term approach to hyperkalemia, and what potassium-lowering strategies and therapies this may involve. The direct connection between RASi and potassium-lowering therapies, especially the absolute need to discontinue potassium-lowering therapies if RASi therapy is discontinued, the requirements for clinical review and monitoring of blood tests related to disease status and medications, and points of contact for clinical or medication queries, such as heart failure nurses. Third, education should be introduced by healthcare professionals and supported by accessible resources. And fourth, all interactions between healthcare professionals and individuals with cardiorenal disease must be used as an opportunity for education, with repetition and refreshing of this education over time to reinforce up-to-date understanding and explain changes to treatment.
So, Stephen, we have discussed some very important topics today regarding how to overcome hyperkalemia as a barrier to RASi optimization and cardiorenal protection. Stephen, what would you say are the key takeaways from the principles proposed by the experts?
Yes, Andrew, we definitely have. In summary, I think the key takeaway principles of optimal practice that we propose today are, first, RASi therapies are a guideline-directed and evidence-based treatment for both chronic kidney disease and heart failure and should be initiated, optimized, and maintained wherever possible to provide cardiorenal protection. Second, hyperkalemia should be considered a predictable and manageable condition in individuals with chronic kidney disease and/or heart failure treated with RASi therapy, with a proactive plan in place for its prevention and management. Third, when hyperkalemia occurs in individuals with chronic kidney disease and/or heart failure treated with RASi therapy, all appropriate non-pharmacological and pharmacological strategies and therapies should be considered and implemented, with RASi down titration or discontinuation seen as a last resort. Fourth, secondary and primary care must communicate effectively and work collaboratively to optimize care, with a shared focus on RASi optimization for cardiorenal protection and the prevention and management of hyperkalemia. And fifth, patients should be educated with key messages concerning chronic kidney disease, heart failure, RASi therapy, and hyperkalemia so that they can better understand, discuss, and take some ownership in the management of their conditions.
That was a great summary. Thank you. Hopefully, adoption of these principles in clinical practice will help to optimize RASi therapy and management of hyperkalemia in individuals with cardiorenal disease.
Yes, that was a great conversation, Andrew, and I hope those of you listening have found our podcast to be useful. Thank you so much.
You can listen to more podcasts by subscribing to ADIS Journal Podcasts with your preferred podcast provider, or by visiting the journal website. For a full list of declarations, including funding and author disclosure statements and copyright information, please visit the article page on the journal website. The link to the article page can be found in the podcast description.